Welcome back into the Podium Game Podcast. I'm Brian Gimmerman, and I'm joined by Aaron Bruski from many of places. First, he has a podcast at CosmBruShow.com, NBCSports.com, which is just more his general NBA writing, which is that's linked to ProBasketballTalk.com. Those are two in the same. And then RotoWorld.com, where you can get his fantasy stuff, which I highly advise. I use myself for my fantasy drafts. Aaron, what's going on?
I am getting through this last week of preseason basketball. It's draft week, so I've got big drafts coming up. So we don't sleep much, but that's part of the fun of it.
And then if you just want to add one more thing, if you just want to feed to all of his stuff and not have to go to each individual website, everything Aaron writes, you can find on his Twitter handle, at Aaron Bruski, A-A-R-O-N-B-U-R-B-R-U-S-K-I. Let me say that again since I'm terrible. A-A-R-O-N-B-R-U-S-K-I. I'm getting over a little bit of a cold. I usually sound very chewy and nasally without it, and I'm even worse today, so I apologize to everyone.
I wasn't going to say anything, but since you said it yourself, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a New York Jew, and then you add a cold to the mix, and it's a really terrible mix. All right, so the Sacramento Kings. Last year, 29-53, they had three different coaches. It was quite the season. Okay, so let me just start with this right here. Their over-under, what is it up to, 35.5?
I think it got up to 36.5.
So it's all the way up to 36.5. You are one of the most, in this regards, you are very stubborn that this is going to be an automatic over. Why?
Just the team's depth, their talent, one of my colleagues put together a list of things that had happened since, they went 29 and whatever you just said. I can't do the math in my head real fast. You mentioned in the onset, changed three coaches, their best player gets viral meningitis. They threw in the towel for literally half the season. I mean, to the point where they just were walking up and down the court because they were so pissed off at the general manager. And none of that stuff is in play this year. The George Karl stuff that's been floated was actually a plan from his agent, and that really changed the narrative. And it was designed to wreak havoc, to pry DeMarcus Cousins away from the Kings when he didn't even want to leave the Kings. There was just a lot of manufactured drama that made the Kings really a butt of jokes, and what ended up happening is they had a bad apple GM, and when the GM and the owner started not seeing eye to eye, it was right around the time the GM leaked stuff to Yahoo Sports about the owner, that's when Vlade Divac came in that didn't have connections to the inside, knowing what was going on. They had a hard time following the story, so there was pieces run about the GM didn't know that Vlade Divac was really in charge, and that people in the front office didn't know that Vlade Divac was in charge. Well, he was brought in as a shot across the bow at Pete D'Alessandro, and then given that power almost instantaneously as soon as the first piece against the owner came up, because at that point the situation was extremely toxic. So the GM was allowed to leave, so that would not become a big controversy. And Vlade has since come in and started to repair all of the damage because the GM was behind the hiring of George Karl. He was the guy that pushed it the most. And because the GM that left was so active in leaking to the press, the narrative got all screwed up. People didn't know what was going on. And people in Sacramento didn't even know who made the decision to hire George Karl. So that was the outgoing GM that did that, and he thought the minute that he hired George Karl, he actually told multiple people, well, now I got to get rid of DeMarcus Cousins, because DeMarcus hadn't been consulted on any of the coaching stuff. He was angry that Michael Malone, he doesn't like being called Mike, he's angry that Michael Malone was fired. None of that stuff went well. That was a train wreck, and when it culminated in hiring a guy that his agents didn't like and they didn't consult him, that's when it hit a critical mass. But Vlade was brought in and literally over. And Vlade, you got to understand, is this guy, he's just as charismatic gets, and he got the guys in the same room, and that drama has more or less subsided. I saw those two on Media Day. They're joking around with each other. I think it's still touchy, probably really touchy, but that drama literally has hit every corner of the internet, and that's what's driving this number down talent-wise. I mean, as long as DeMarcus Cousins doesn't get viral meningitis, if he doesn't get, you know, if they don't do anything too crazy there, the team is just dramatically better than it was last year. So, yeah, I've got 47 wins.
So, okay, so for right now, from the gist of what you just said, Carl and Cousins are fine right now, but still a little bit of a powder keg.
Yeah, I think that the wild card there is DeMarcus has, you know, I don't want to, we'll just call them trust issues. And so if you cross him, you might be crossed off the list. In this case, though, there's so much focus and attention on the situation that he's really working hard to get over that kind of thing. What we're all kind of watching for is if they start losing. If they start losing and DeMarcus, who has things to work on in his game, like focus and channeling his want and desire to win into positive things and not negative things, if Carl starts getting on him for that stuff, and then DeMarcus has to work through those issues, and they're losing at the same time, there's a little bit of a worry that he could say, you know what, screw it. But he's been really committed to Sacramento, and he's really been committed to this team. He's really close with his teammates. The teammates feel close with him, close enough to tell him what they think. So I think they'll have enough policing in the locker room to smooth over anything. And I think Carl learned a lesson that he can't make comments in the press about this particular player without, I mean, he...
The golf thing was stupid.
He more or less almost got fired over it.
That was, I remember watching that and just be like, what in the hell is this guy doing right now?
He's like a stubborn guy, you know? George Carl has been around for a long time. He's not going to give in. I mean, he has probably, you know, a way that he coaches players that have these kind of like gruff personalities, and he's not giving in. And at the same time, when he made the comment to the press, the old general manager was very much behind the scenes trying to work out a trade. So he felt like he could say that and get a problem off of his hands in his mind. So that has in turn, you know, caused this chain reaction of things to happen, but he apologized for it, and that's, you know, that's turning the page there. But it went through quite a rocky road where George Carl was on the outside looking in within the Kings organization for about a good week there until Vlade got everybody in the same room and said, hey, this has got to end. And that's what's more or less happened.
All right, so now let's try and focus in on some basketball stuff. I don't disagree with you about the talent of the roster. I probably think higher of DeMarcus Cousins than most. Kufis, solid player. I mean, they got a bunch of solid players on this roster. Where my questions come in is, are they going to play the right players, and how will this group mesh? What are they kind of going to build as an identity, and how is it going to fit together?
Great questions. The players that you probably have question marks, if I had to guess, I'm not going to put words in your mouth, but like Rajon Rondo would probably be a question mark. Beyond that, Ben McLemore is a question mark right now.
Yeah, but McLemore, I think, has proven he deserves some level of play, and they need his shooting. I mean, really, it's Rondo, and then playing the right type of lineups that involve enough shooting to fit in today's NBA.
The good news is Darren Collison has completely won over George Karl. I mean, George Karl can't stop gushing about the guy, and for good reason. He's got pretty much a deadly corner three. Like, I get surprised when he doesn't hit it, and he pushes the pace, and he's the third best player on the team, and he's enamored with him. So by virtue of that, you're either going to have to bench Ben McLemore outright, which isn't going to happen, or cut into Marco Bellinelli's minutes. That guy is probably locked into a solid 25 minutes a game no matter what happens. it's just not going to happen. Darren Collison's going to play a lot, and I think what you're going to see is Rajon Rondo and Ben McLemore see their minutes in the 20-minute range. And that will make this team a lot like it was last year, just with the holes that, I mean, you would have, like, Reggie Evans coming in and playing big minutes. You'd have Ray McCallum coming in and playing big minutes, and just the kind of the list goes on. Now you're going to see Rudy Gay, DeMarcus Cousins, Kosta Koufos, Willie Cauley-Stein, Omri Caspi for like 20 minutes a game, and then the aforementioned guards, and that's your rotation. So if they want to play it small, they can play it small. If they want to put shooters on the floor, they can put shooters on the floor. If they want to go big, they can go big. And that's part of the appeal here, because if one player, like Willie Cauley-Stein, suffered an ankle injury today, it's not thought to be a big deal. But if somebody suffers, they got next man up. So that's part of the appeal here of taking that over.
Alright, so when Rondo's minutes inevitably get cut, are they going to be willing? How is that going to play over?
That's a big question right there, because, and frankly, I don't know. Rondo has not been that, you know, he hasn't been bad. And the thing about Rondo is when his defender sags off of him, it doesn't show up in the box score as like, you know, like a turnover or something. But that's still happening, and that's a big problem. But what Rondo's doing that's been nice is he's introducing an element of ball movement that the Kings have really struggled with in the past. So you almost can live with certain things that are going on. Now, they haven't run a lot of regular season offense, is what I'd call it. You know, mixing and matching rotations, George Karl searching for combinations, the other team's playing half their guys, or maybe the Kings are playing half their guys. So we really haven't seen the actual, you know, the actual goods. But they're going to run an up-tempo spread system, and that's going to just be really interesting. If you got Rajon Rondo on the open floor and he's making passes and you got big men and, you know, Rudy Gay finishing and guys out on the break, I really think that plays to Rondo's strengths. But if it gets into a half-court game and DeMarcus Cousins is hanging out at the elbow and Rajon Rondo standing out at the break, you know, dribbling with his guy hanging out in the key, and it just looks all packed in and there's not a lot of ball movement as a result, that's when I think it can get ugly. But I think George Karl will pull the trigger and say, hey, you're going to play 20 minutes a game, Rajon.
You mentioned the fast-paced spread, open style. Does Cousins like playing in that type of system, or would he still prefer more of a half-court game?
I think he likes both, to be honest. And I think what happens, though, is when the Kings start to lose, I think he wants to get back down on the post. And that, because that's his comfort zone. He likes to shoot jumpers. I think he likes the challenge of proving that he can shoot jumpers, but there was a little friction about where he was playing last year, and that leads me to believe that because he was playing more up on at the top of the key, give and go type situation, that maybe not something he likes a whole lot. But I hate to pigeonhole a guy. He really fancies himself a guard on the floor. He really does. If you ask him what position he plays, he doesn't play a position.
Oh, and he's skilled enough that he can do all that stuff, but you also don't want to take the post-up stuff, which he is very good at, out of his game. You'd want to find a way to incorporate and use that because it can help them offensively. Is Karl going to do that?
If I had my way, I would barely take him off the post. I just feel like it's letting the other team off the hook. He can sit there and foul out the other big men really quickly, get 10 free throws a game. You maybe worry about durability a bit, and I see the benefits of having him pop out, especially against defenders like Andrew Bogut, Marc Gasol, these other guys that are big, heavy guys. Take him outside and let him shoot his jumper. If he wants to shoot a jumper in transition, fine. What they're trying to do, though, is create this up-tempo system that really generates a lot of open looks from three. And if that means that DeMarcus Cousins has to handle the ball out on the perimeter, that's, I think, something they're willing to take a chance at. And Karl has even alluded to the fact he's very much an experimental guy. So he's morphing this offense into something that maybe isn't something we've seen before. And with all of the statistics that point towards a pace and space, which I can't stand saying that now, but a pace and space offense, I think what he wants to do is create a hybrid of that where they run, DeMarcus handles at the top, If that's not there, then he goes down to the block and he does work there. We'll see how that goes. I really would just stick him on the block every time and run a half-court set, but I'm old school like that.
Yeah, so you... And you can generate threes that way, too, out of him getting post-ups when he gets doubled in the block.
And he's an exceptional cross-court passer, so, I mean, there's a lot to be said for that. And there's also quite a few mouths to feed this year. That's the other thing about this offense. So, Rudy Gay, you know, is going to take a lot of shots. He's been efficient. I think that the chemistry issue of how they gel, and especially with how tough their first 10 games are, and then the criticism that will mount if they go, say, like 2-8, that's going to be one of the most fascinating storylines of November.
Do you think Rudy Gay plays more 3 or 4 this year?
I think he's going to play about 10 to 15 minutes at the 4. They love him at the 4. It's hard when you have Cousins there for 35 minutes playing one of the two big man positions, and then you're going to get Kosta Koufos, who's, I mean, if you took the name on his jersey and just covered it with tape and said, hey, evaluate this guy, people would be in love with what he does. He's got a good post game. Defensively, he moves well, and he blocks shots. And it's just kind of, he's not like spectacular in any one area, but he's above average in most. And so he's going to get 25 minutes a game, maybe even more than that. And then you got, you know, the opposite of that, high-flying Willie Cauley-Stein, who's going to do like two or three amazing things per game that you're just like, whoa, I've never seen that before.
I love Willie Cauley-Stein. And that's the funny thing, even though I disagree with you about maybe how well this goes, I really like a bunch of the players on this roster. Even a guy like Caron Butler, he's not the player he once was, but he's gonna, if this team wants to shoot more threes, he's a guy who can help in that department.
Yeah. That's the thing that they've also really lacked in previous years is outside shooting. I mean, it's been so bad from three for these guys. And that's also another spectacular thing about DeMarcus Cousins is he's been able to do what he's been able to do with no three-point shooting around him whatsoever. And with just Marco Bellinelli alone, I think that's where Carl's genius is actually going to come into play. And this is another guy that's barely ever won less than 30 games. I mean, he's above that mark every single year. He's going to be able to say, okay, you know what, we need some shooting. Well, I've got Marco Bellinelli and Caron Butler, or, you know, Omri Caspi can shoot a little bit. I can go small, Darren Collison, put him at the 2. A lot of different ways he can generate shooting from the outside. And I think that's...
Are you still there?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Can they get 10 a game? You got Anderson, Bellinelli, Butler, Caspi, Collison, Rudy Gay, McLemore. Those are probably your main three-point shooters. You think they can get between, like, 10 and 13 a game out of those guys?
Yeah. Yeah, I think I can actually probably tell you what I, while we're talking here, I'll get you a hard number on what I've got them down for, at least as a, you know, a general main rotation here. I do think that they can. They have a mandate to shoot them, so that's going to help things. But they, I mean, 10 is just a small number.
They're under the shoot three pointers or die mandate.
Not or die like Houston, but you know that is the idea, is really to get up and down the floor and let them fly. I mean, they're letting DeMarcus Cousins shoot. He's been shooting like 3 a game. I mean, they've like literally, hey, go shoot a lot of threes, DeMarcus. So that,
and
you know,
every big man loves that.
Oh, isn't it the worst thing? And that is at every college and high school gym in America. If you're a big man, if you play center, you're out there taking threes.
Get out of my space. That's what I'm supposed to do.
That's crazy.
I can't go in your space.
Let's see here. If you want to move on to the next topic, I'll spit this out.
Okay, cool. Let's see. Where do we want to go next? I kind of mentioned Willie Cauley-Stein, but we didn't dig into it too much. So do you see him playing mainly next to Cousins, or do you think he's a guy they use when they go small to use his athletic ability to cover up for others' mistakes on the defensive end?
I'm going to say yes. they're definitely going to use him next to Cousins. He's probably going to start. As long as this ankle issue isn't too weird, he'll probably start. But like as a five, I could see them using him as a five. I could see him using him as a three, to be honest. Like not like a more than 2 minutes a game type lineup, but he's so versatile. If anything, he's too light right now. But he flies in a way that I have not seen a tall guy like that fly. He's way faster than Rudy Gobert. They're going to use him in every lineup imaginable. You'll see him with Kosta Kufos. You'll see him with DeMarcus Cousins. You'll see him as a five next to Rudy Gay. You'll see him as a five next to Omri Caspi. Maybe even like Quincy Acey. I mean, I don't think they've got like a particular limitation with who they want him playing next to.
Have they been using him, something he didn't do a lot in college that is probably going to be a big part of his NBA game, is running pick and roll. How has he looked in that aspect?
Passable, because to the backside of the rim, and he'll have quite a bit of gravity there. The offensive game is clearly not there, though. Like, as much as he wants to say that it's there, he's an adventure with the ball. But you give him just a little bit of air space on a lob, and he's going to have that down. So, I mean, I put him in the same ballpark as, like, a DeAndre Jordan in that realm. You know, he's going to not be quite as good as DeAndre. He's been in the league a little bit. He can, you know, catch some things that Willie Cauley-Stein probably can't catch. But I think at the end of the day, you know, you can stick him in the pick and roll, you know, make him the, you know, he's not your primary action, but he's just, you want him diving to the back of the rim.
What are they going to do to make whatever spacing issues kind of try and cover up for those whenever he's playing with another one of the bigs?
I think that's where you're going to have to see, you know, DeMarcus Cousins pop out a little bit. And that might be a little bit of the thinking with George Karl, because with Willie Cauley-Stein, if he's not screening, you just got to park him on the baseline and, you know, kind of get him out of the way. But that's when you can put DeMarcus Cousins up at the top of the elbow, or, you know, wherever you want to stick him outside the pattern. And that's what you're going to see a lot of. The good news, I mean, Kosta Kufos can probably be counted on from like 15 feet in. So he's not at zero from that range. Small ball fours. I mean, I'm trying to actively think in my head situations. I would probably not like him next to Kufos very much. And with Cousins, you just want to make sure with Cousins that Cousins is on the same page with that particular game plan. And that, you know, is going to come with time with George Karl. They got to get that chemistry down, because if DeMarcus wants to go park it on the post, Willie Cauley-Stein's hanging out at the free throw line, that's not going to work very well.
See, and this is kind of where my hesitation is. Like, do I see a scenario where they definitely go hit the over? Yes, but then why it's more of a stay away for me is that there's a lot of variables in play here about how this all fits together.
Absolutely. I absolutely see anybody's apprehension from the outside, but I mean, gosh, it's the Vegas over-under, at least where it started at 30.5, was basically the same amount of games they won last season, and I cannot underscore for you how both, like, the team was half as good, and the outgoing management was 50 times as bad.
Well, they were going to win 45 games last year if Cousins didn't get sick, and they were going to win 40, I mean, maybe 45s.
40 to 45 games.
Yeah, if Cousins doesn't get sick and they keep Malone around. I don't know if Carl's got to find a way to get Cousins to play defense like he was at the beginning of last year, though.
Yeah, well, you nailed it on the head right there. That is probably, I mean, again, this all comes down to Carl Cousins' dynamics, but that particular issue is the defining issue of this defense, because if you have a DeMarcus Cousins and Willie Cauley-Stein and Kosta Kufos front court that's active and engaged, that might be the best defensive front court in the NBA. I mean, I'm struggling to think of one that's better, and I'm already thinking of Memphis. I'm already thinking of Chicago if you were to theoretically have, you know, Noah and Taj Gibson in a starting lineup.
Gobert and Favors.
I mean, I
The only hesitation to put them is, as good as much as I love Willie Cauley-Stein, he is still a rookie.
He's a rookie and he gets pushed around because of his high center of gravity and he's rail thin.
And just learning the NBA, how to play team concepts in the NBA level, that it might just take a little bit for everything to click for him.
Absolutely. I mean, and you would think, like, if you had to bet money heads up on DeMarcus Cousins and Kostas Koufos versus Derek Favors and Rudy Gobert, I'd probably take the Utah side.
Yeah, right now. Gobert's entering his third year in the league, and he got significant minutes last year. Favors has been doing it for a long time since he's young. You got two guys in the Kings who have been doing it, and then one guy who's coming in completely green.
Yeah, but then you do look at some of the stuff that Willie Cauley-Stein has done this preseason. This is just really savvy too. And the only reason he can do that stuff is because he has the athleticism. He knows he can get to a spot, and he does it. And you're just like, wow. You know, the anticipation and the follow-through on whatever he's doing, either blocking a shot or changing it or sliding his feet, it's amazing. But with DeMarcus, people don't realize what kind of a crazy speed, size, even leaping combo he is. Like, he gets a good amount of steals per game and a good amount of blocks, and that's just a really rare combo in the NBA. Like, guys, I mean, the only guys that do that are, like, Nerlens Noel, you know, like even a guy like Derek Favors. Rudy Gobert does it fairly well. Hassan Whiteside does it fairly well, but this is like the cream of the crop athletically that can both move side to side to get those steals and also leap to get the blocks. Anthony Davis, obviously, he does that. So, I mean, it's an interesting bet if you were to say which was the better front court between Utah and Sac with just the two guys on each side. But then when you do add Willie Cauley-Stein to the back, that's where I wonder, are they the best front court defense in the NBA?
And even, I'd say even with Cousins, also important, he's always near the top of the league in charges, too. He's a good, smart, positional defender when he's engaged.
The fact that he's doing both things, usually guys are one or the other. They're not above and below the rim. He's doing the charges, he's doing the blocks, and he's doing the steals. And at the same time, I've seen some terrible defense out of him. But when he was under Mike Malone, he was a monster. That team was really scary. When they were playing Memphis, I remember Memphis wanted nothing to do with those guys in Memphis. And it was a different ball of wax.
I remember watching the game at Phoenix early last season, and I was just watching Cousins. He fouled out of that game.
Yeah, I remember that game.
And it went to overtime, and he was so good on both ends of the court. I was like, holy cow, like the positional defense he was playing, defending pick and rolls and stuff like that. I was like, this is the guy I thought could be one of the five best players in the NBA, and he's actually doing that right now.
Yeah, so that will be the question. The one thing that was my podcast with James Hamm is this is an interesting situation because his teammates can win without him now. And that's really powerful. In the past, if DeMarcus wasn't on the floor, those guys just had no chance. But if you had a lineup with Kostas Koufos, you know, whoever you want to start at power forward, whether it be Willie Cauley-Stein or Rudy Gay, and then fill it on down the line, those guys aren't going to roll over. You know, they're going to be competitive, especially against the East. Against the West, they're going to be in it. You know, it's not going to be like a lost cause. So I think there'll be a better accountability for him with his teammates where he can't necessarily take himself out of games anymore and get away with it because the team will just keep going without him.
So if you're picking, let's finish up on this, if you're picking the Kings to make this jump, there's got to be someone that falls. Where's that?
Well, first of all, I think it's going to be a bad year to be in the Eastern Conference, and more so than years past. Like the balance of power is more dramatic than I've ever seen, and so I would even be willing to bet on that.
But West teams have to be falling too in this
West
scenario.
Teams are they will be falling. A big team that's been, I think Vegas has for like 49 wins, which is absurd, is the New Orleans Pelicans.
Okay, I'm with you on that.
People are going to be jumping off the bandwagon because of injuries to Tyreke Evans and Norris Cole. But what I mean, that to me is almost like a bailout for those people that are betting them so high, is all that stuff was expected to happen in the middle of the year, not before the year. And it's already happening. And the Norris Cole one, that's just terrible because he was supposed to carry the weight in the backcourt for those guys. They could seriously, one, they're like, obviously Anthony Davis is an injury risk. If that guy goes down, they're now competing with the Mavs at the bottom of the West. You know, the Mavs are going to be at the bottom. I like the Lakers, what they did, so they're not going to be quite as bad as people think, but they're definitely down low. The Minnesota Timberwolves are going to be down low. Denver's going to they'll be down low. Houston's my other team. I mean, their front court depth is not good. You know, Dwight Howard is on the wrong side of his career.
Ooh, that's I disagree with that, actually. I think their front court depth is great.
Well, I mean, if you consider that, you know, Terrence Jones had random nerve damage to his leg, had a punctured lung, and is now coming off of, you know, nothing serious, but, you know, hurt ribs and a concussion heading into the year, that's not feeling too good. And then Dennis Bodie-Junis is not, we don't know when he's coming back, though he looks good, but a back injury that went like 4 months after its expected timeline, that's not sounding good. And then Dwight Howard, I mean, I think he played 60 games this year.
But that's why Capella's important.
And he's already got a shoulder injury.
All right, so I get it. If you take injuries into account, but on the surface without that stuff, those four are that's four really good players.
I think that the Lawson thing will work, and I took the under on Houston. All of this stuff I'm saying, by the way, I went and I bet it.
So he's putting his money where his mouth is. He is living that cliche right there.
Yeah, I put a significant. So.
All right, so the Lakers. So what about the other two teams that, Portland, obviously, yeah, falling off and from what they did last year. So that leaves the Kings. The teams in the mix with the Kings are the Suns and the Jazz.
I like the Suns, and I like the Jazz. I'm a little concerned about the Jazz with their point guard situation, because even though I like Raul Neto, I mean, expecting a lot out of that kid is not going to be great. And then we've seen what Trey Burke has done now. The report's been positive about him so far, but I don't like to get high off preseason reports, you know. That, to me, is a recipe for disaster. So if you don't have a point guard that can command the game, I mean, Gordon Hayward looks awesome, by the way. I mean, that guy put on 15 pounds of muscle, and he put on 15 pounds of muscle last year. So he's a tank right now. I think he's going to be a number one scorer in this league. So I'm high on the Jazz.
I talked about this on our preview podcast with Jared Dubin, that they're going to end up needing to use Hood, Burks.
Yes, they'll throw the kitchen sink at it.
Yeah, just play your five. Just get your five best players on the court. And between those guys, they should have enough ball creation, shot creation to run their offense.
I mean, and then you're going to see some wins from the top of this thing. I don't think the Golden State Warriors are interested in winning 67 games this year. I think that they've got a minute plan on their main guys. I think they come back. Houston, I would say, is probably closer to 44 than 56. Maybe not 44, like 46, something like that.
Oh, I'll take the over on that. I think they cruise past that again.
Give me 47 and I'll be a happy guy.
I think they're right around 55 again.
All right, that's a gentleman's bet between us. The Clippers I like, Portland, yeah, we talked about them. The Spurs.
The Thunder are going to try and kill the world.
I think I might pick them to win it all.
I picked the Warriors again, because I think just with how good they were, even if they're like slightly worse, they were so good last year that they're fine. But yeah, I mean, the Thunder are going to try and kill everyone. It feels like they're going to try and kill everyone.
I mean, why wouldn't they, too? I mean, I think they should do it. Like, go get that one seed, make everybody play in that crazy arena in Oklahoma City, and win it all. I mean, they've had more talent than everybody else for a long time.
Yeah, my questions with them are just when it comes down to it, is Cantor going to play too much and take down their defense? That's really the only worry I have about that team.
Serge Ibaka might have a million blocks this year.
Yeah. What do you got? I mentioned a bunch of your stuff earlier. You have anything you specifically want to plug?
I'm going to be releasing an update to the Brewski 150 late Friday night, and then a final set of rankings on Monday or maybe Tuesday morning, depending on when I can get to it. But that's really for me right now what I'm focused on. And then in the middle of the year or after opening night, I go to kind of Kings coverage and fantasy coverage. So, yeah, check out the Brewski 150.
All right, and
rotoworld.com.
I was about to throw it in for you. That's over at rotoworld.com. All right, Aaron, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Anytime, man.
All right, that wraps up this edition of the Podium Game Podcast.